Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And just so lucky today to be where I am and with whom I am, including with you. I want to tell you a story. This is a very, very good story. This is about someone who I do counseling with from Ireland. So from Ireland, what we do is we'll do this Skype sessions to kind of get some work done. And she came up with this brilliant thought. Here's the thought. The thought was, she said to me, when I'm trying to tell people who I am, they look like they get disinterested over time. And what they need to do, what happens is I talk to them for a while, and then suddenly they kind of drift away. And I said, well, they're not getting the inside of you? She said, no, they're not getting the inside of me. They don't really care. They don't really pay attention. How many of you have been in that situation in life? Well, you're talking to somebody, and they're not really paying attention to what you're saying. They're ready to move on, right? Move on, you know, let's get on to the next thing. I don't want to hear what you're feeling. I don't want to hear your story. Go ahead, tell me your story. I don't want to hear your story, but I have to listen to it. Okay, I'll listen to it. Now, this thing goes on so much, and it hurts so many people, and it carries so much pain with it, and I want to examine why that happens. So I would say, what she said to me, this lovely being said, I try to tell them my stuff, but they seem to lose interest in the story. And I said to her, maybe your story is not really carrying the stuff. Maybe the story doesn't really reflect the stuff. And that the stuff, which is your feelings, the basic feelings that you have and the real feelings you have, in order for you to kind of communicate them, what you do is you translate them into a story. So, for example, let's say you're feeling sad. And you go to someone and say, well, I lost my best friend. My best friend and I used to play together when we were kids. And then recently she got cancer. And then she was in the hospital. Now, this is the story behind the stuff, which is, I feel bad, I feel sad, I feel scared, I need you to love me. Now, this is big news. If the story behind the stuff never reflects the stuff, how do you get to the stuff behind the story? And you got to watch out for the story, because it's so easy to re-engage in the story. So you can perpetuate the story. Then the story goes, and then she died of cancer. Oh, yeah, well, my sister died of cancer, too. Oh, your sister died of cancer? And now the story gets into another story. Well, I had a friend who was kind of when I was a kid, and then the story goes beyond the story. Where is the story going? It's going away from the now. It's going away from the stuff of right now. Now the story has sails on it. It's like a ship that's taking off, you know? And it's like it's going, and then we have this story continuing. And the other person is looking at you, and since they're not connecting with you, they get bored. And what they do is they just kind of drift away with the story. So the story does not reflect the stuff. This is an interesting concept, don't you think?
Absolutely, Armand. I think it reminds me a lot of something that we did over the weekend. That we were in a group of many people, and you were kind of showing me how easy it is to get away from the now. And you asked me to talk to somebody and ask them what they were doing in that very moment in the group that we were in. And it was amazing how quickly the story went off the rails and became about something else. And then you said, stop. The story is no longer about right here, right now. And that's something that's always been amazing to me about you, is how quickly you're able to cut to the inside. Like you mentioned, this woman in Ireland who feels like nobody really looks at her inside and they don't delve deeper into her personality. And with you, whether it's been in my interactions with you or listening to the show, it's always amazed me how quickly you get to that, the heart of the matter, so to speak.
Oh, what I'm looking for is the stuff.
Right.
Beyond the story. Because the story is what distracts us. Now, here comes the question, is the story meant to distract you? Mm. Is in the story, are we trying to distract a person by getting them away from what our real feelings are because we're uncomfortable with our real feelings? So, for example, if I say I feel lonely, and then I say to you, but my father neglected me as a child, I now, in my story, I've directed your attention to me and my father back then, but it gets me away from the loneliness that I feel now. So is the purpose of a story to distract from the stuff? You want to know the stuff? I'm sad. I'm mad. I'm glad. I'm bad. I'm scared. That's the stuff. Those are easy enough. But all the stuff that gives us, that takes us away from that, no good. Okay, so now listen, in this wonderful vein of discovering this stuff behind the story, a la Ireland, which is pretty darn good. A friend of mine comes along. So here I am many years later. I had a training group many years ago with about 40 people. And how many people were in that, Alan? Do you remember?
Oh, 40, 50, a lot of people.
Yeah, they were training. And in that group was this wonderful man, Alan Wells. Beautiful, beautiful human being who I consider one of the best on the planet. Alan's in New Jersey, and Alan comes by, and he and I connected recently because I was trying to send him a patient, and I haven't seen him in 30 years, and here we are together hugging each other today, saying hello, good friend. And Alan is a very wise man. He's one of the wisest men that I've ever met, but Alan doesn't have good stories behind his stuff because he doesn't translate all that well. He's written a brilliant piece that I really like, which we have here as well. But it's what we're going to hear is Alan describing something that may not necessarily translate into a story. So I'm going to get it for you. I'm going to tell you what this man knows, because this man knows stuff that I've yet to learn about the human body and the way the human body connects to the spiritual self and the real self and the stuff. Alan, welcome to WBAI.
It is so good to be here, Ahmad. And you, when you just said that about the stuff, it brought back all the memories that I have of being with you way back there and how much I learned about just what you're saying today. And right at this very moment, I can feel my stuff, which is, such feelings of gratitude. And I feel very almost a teary. I can feel it bubbling up inside and seeing the face that I knew so well. I could tell a lot of stories but of how we got started and what we did, but maybe I'll hold it for just a moment. But it feels like one of the reasons I was so happy to be invited to come was it was an opportunity for me to basically show my gratitude from all the experience that I had with you. You set me on a new road. Before I saw you, I was pretty stuck in a therapy that was pretty much story-oriented, a lot of talk. Talk therapy is mostly it's called. And when I got connected with you, that began to drop away and started me on a really different course, which I've followed ever since. And in last years, it's that awareness of the difference between the stuff and the story has even grown. I've been involved in the last few years more in a mindfulness-based psychotherapy approach, but it's still the further refinement of exactly what I was able to do with you back in those days.
What we were exploring back in those days. Yeah. I had a group of warriors who were ready to challenge anything. Let's go there. We got to find out what that's about. Does it scare us? Let's try it out.
I remember one time that when I first was in the group that you had, that what really struck me was your awareness that almost anything could go in that group except damage to another person or to the facility. But other than that, your encouragement was to explore, to see what's coming up, to see what's new. And that was scary, but it was also really exciting.
Do you remember one particular scary incident?
I wish I could. There were so many that I could. Every time I went to the group, I felt scared.
Right.
Because I knew something was going to come up, and the thing was, it wasn't story outline. I didn't know what it would be, so that was always a surprise, a scary part of it. But I always left the group feeling like I'd experienced a new part of myself.
So how do you take that and apply that today with the sense of your own presence? Now, so there you are, you know, you're a guy who's a beautiful man. If anybody meets you, they say, what a nice guy, at least, you know. But there you are, as wise as you are. How do you take this and use your awareness of your presence, of your stuff, avoidance of your story in your everyday life? How do you do it? I know in counseling we'll talk about that, but how do you do it in your own life, Alan?
Well, it's a chief, goal, a chief something for which I'm striving, that very thing. So sometimes it my means is very, very simple. Also stuff that I got from being with you. Particularly, one thing comes to my mind is just simply paying attention to my breath. My breath often puts me in contact with everything else that's going along in the body, with all kinds of other feelings. And it'll pull me down from that inclination to go off into the sky a bit and start in with the story.
So now let me get that right. You attend to the breath itself, the breathing process?
The actual breathing breath.
And what do you notice that the difference between valid breathing and not valid breathing?
Well, I notice when...
And by valid, I mean it matches the stuff.
Yes.
But not necessarily the
yes,
story.
Yes, so it could take all kinds That's of brilliant. Forms. It could be vibrant. It could be, thinned out and squeezed out if I'm feeling really tight at that moment and don't want to shy, don't want to express stuff. I notice it in my breath. And most of the time, I feel it sort of like a experience of surfing in the water. The waves can be high, they can be low, they can be all kinds of variation.
So if you get out of whack, if you get out of breathing whack, right, which would be to, if inspire is to breathe in, you inspire me, and right?
Yeah.
And to despire would mean all of a sudden you're kind of out of whack with your breathing. Now, Julian was talking to me earlier about a level of breathing he gets into sometimes where he's going very, very, very fast. Right, Julian? And that knocks you out.
Yeah, sometimes I can find myself almost hyperventilating just based off of what I'm doing. If I'm rushing somewhere or doing something, even if I'm not moving, but I'm doing something intensely, I'm constantly multitasking, I'll find myself speeding up my heart, my breath, my fingers, my eyes, everything.
Now take that, because I want to use that, Alan. So there he is with 22-year-old metabolism, giving him that additional bunch of speed, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could go in there with your 55-year-old, well,
a little longer than that.
Okay, but you could go in there with your 60-year-old wisdom, and you could say to him, well, all you got to do is calm down to become 60. That doesn't work.
No.
He's on 22-year-old metabolism. And he'll say to you, why do you talk faster?
And it wouldn't work with me either if that was happening with me, if I find my breath was all excited. It's not so much of telling myself to do something right, but it's to be connected with whatever the heck it is that is happening right at that moment.
So Julian would have to be aware that he's breathing fast and hyperventilating, but bring a consciousness to it that would in some way stop him from turning into another story.
Exactly. And the unwillingness to be so connected with the experience would be exactly the trigger that would put me off into the story, which would just go nowhere.
Well, Julian, what stops at that moment? Because this is a good theory. But, you know, in psychology, we have a lot of theories, and the theories mean junk. The assumption here is, Julian's going to notice he's breathing fast. Then he'll stop, and he'll meditate, and he'll suddenly calm down. It doesn't work that way, does it?
I mean, not if I've got stuff to do, and I kind of always have something to do, so I don't really have a moment to pause. I mean, I notice for myself, the only time I really do calm down is when I lie down. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I lie down on my bed,
yes.
flat back, and then I can really take a moment. But, I mean, I think that's the only place.
Sometimes I do the very same thing yeah. with Julia. Actually, if I'm home and are able to do that, just actually physically lying down.
Yeah, physically lying down.
But somewhere. I've also found, as I get a little bit more, I guess I would say, skilled, that it's easy to have little short insights into mm-hmm. what's going on and connections, and gradually, over a period of time, they begin to work.
They begin to sort of show off, yeah.
We're talking about the story behind the stuff with Alan Wells, my dear friend Alan Wells, Julian Jaiolo, Ben Starr, and of course, the work of Catherine Reed, who is what brought this this wonderful concept, just the way you could picture the concept, the story behind the stuff. You know why people don't pay attention to your stories? Because they're not really showing the stuff, or they don't want to see the stuff.
It's interesting because me, you, and Ben, we had met over this weekend, and Ben referred to it before. We were talking about really being in the now and looking at someone and totally talking to them without this story, just reaching for that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I found myself constantly going for the story. And I find that in this kind of like a training in small talk, I was saying, like, I feel like I have like a weird ability to small talk really well, which turns into me talking all about story and things that are sort of floating around rather than the stuff that we were trying to go for. And I noticed that when we were together over this weekend. And it's really interesting concept to see.
Yes, and I just find for myself, Julian, first of all, it's just noticing, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe I notice my breathing is all out of whack and it's puffing me up and so forth. But then, so that's number one. But then number two is not trying to correct it and make a change. And I also hopefully notice that just what you said, that there's a tendency, I want to maybe, if it's not a good feeling, especially go into a story. Or if it is a good feeling, I may want to go into a story because I want to have a little distance from all that excitement that I'm feeling inside.
Mm-hmm. It can be either, right?
If you think about it, we open up the possibility of a story every day, many times, multiple times per day, just with the question of how you doing or how you been. And I think, Armand, when you say that a lot of people may not want to hear the story, there's an unspoken social contract that when I ask you how you're doing or how you've been, that I'm expecting you to say good or okay. And those are the acceptable answers. And I think a lot of times when we ask people that question, we really don't give them space to answer in any other way. And that may be why many times people just are overwhelmed by the story. Because there are these niceties, these little pieces of small talk, like you said, Julian, that really don't create room for there to be anything other than a good, I'm great, I'm okay. Anything else is sort of off limits.
You want the truth? You want to hear what's really going on? You want me to really tell you the story? Oh, no.
Keep it to yourself.
No, thank you very much. No, thank you. I'm just passing by. Ben Starr, Julian Jaiolo, Alan Wells, Armand DeMille. And with you, with the positive mind, bringing you these ideas, my friends, these concepts, this idea about the story behind the stuff. You know, it may be even more primitive than that, Ben, because if you think about it, there is nothing worse for teenagers to hear than listening to old folks talk about their inner organs. Right? Old folks talk about, you know, my liver, I got my liver, my heart, my breathing, my... You talk about that, and to an adolescent, it's like they're looking at disgusting food on a plate. You know what I mean? They practically see it. So when they do, when you... Since it seems to be some rule not to talk about the inside organs, And you would imagine that somehow if you're an animal who's in survival and you're trying to get by in life, you don't want the predators to smell your inner organs or something like that, or bad smell is no good. And, you know, old people tend to smell of their disorders. So it's like something goes on that's a prohibition. So there may be a prohibition about talking about the inner physical self that could then manifest into a prohibition about talking about the inner vulnerabilities as well. So maybe it was just survival. Nobody wants to know you're weak, because if you show that you're weak, the tiger's going to eat you. So you got. Remember the rule in life. What's the big rule in life? Everybody here knows, right? Eat and don't get eaten.
Yeah, or get eaten, right?
Eat and don't get eaten. That's the rule in life.
So the crucial step, you know, for me, comes in this process of is the pause, because that earlier part of the brain, all those early built-in desires to avoid being a victim of a predator, they just. Boy, they come right in. You know, they flash in like zip. And if I don't have an opportunity to pause a little, I can just get carried right away with them into a disguise story or whatever it is.
So that's why you live in New Jersey. That's why.
To some degree, yes.
Sure, because you get chance for pause. Yes. You know?
Yes, well, it's true.
You get a chance to be able to take a distance because you got more space there. If I invite you, I say, Alan Wells, I love you so much. I would love you to come and work with me, which I would, by the way. I would be so honored if he would be here in New York. He says to me, what do I want that for? He says, I got New Jersey. I got my own timing. I got my own space. I got my own office. I got my own clients. He says, and do you want me to walk into that hornet's nest that happens? And when he walked in today, we were in the middle of a Verizon hornet's nest, right? And he saw it just as it was appearing.
It's funny.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah, it's true.
And who wants to do this? Now, what's the advantage of this, Alan?
Of
the hornet's nest.
Oh, well, sometimes there's no alternative, right?
I mean, but for you, though, why would you opt for it if you have...
Oh, right. I would prefer not to, right?
Not at all, yeah, right? But then there's another part of you that senses it wants energy.
Yes, there is. And so there's a certain... And the thing that I'm... You know, one of the things that I'm mostly learning, Armand, is that most of my energy, which is I do need a lot of, came from nervousness. It came from being so tight and keyed up that, you know, there was that vibration. I'm beginning to learn, and this has taken some time, that what is kind of counterintuitive would be that when I'm more relaxed and everything is slowed down, the pauses and the whole bit. Actually, there is a supply of energy there, but it's not familiar really yet with me. I'm used to the energy that comes from, I've got to do this, do that, do that, and being on the alert. But I'm beginning to understand, you know, it's more of a softer energy, though, as I would describe it. But it is, I'm beginning to realize that the body is full of energy. It's more to what we do to dampen it with the, one other thing being the stories that we're talking about.
Well, you see, now that's a good point. Because I think, Alan, you know, even sick bodies are filled with energy. I think even bodies that are tired, that are sick, if you could have the kind of dreams I have, or when I haven't slept for 2 hours, you know, we just put 2 hours and I still have such an active brain. There's a lot of energy in that body. There's a lot of stuff to be released. So even if you're the sickest, the oldest, the most broken, you believe you don't have energy, so you drag yourself around like you don't have it. What Alan is saying is, no, there's a resource in there. There's a power in there. There is a thing in there that's always available as long as you're not putting yourself down and for what you're missing, loving what is.
I used to get people would tell me if I'm going to speak or something, it would be good to be a little nervous because it would get up my energy.
Yes.
And I think the confusion there, why that is not really true, is confusing alertness with not realizing you can be alert and relaxed at the same time. There's a sense that alertness means charged. And this is still something that I'm gradually discovering, I can be quiet and alert.
You're going to get it long before I do, because because I still walk in this studio every day and I tell everybody I'm going to get nervous. And I rev myself up with worries and concerns. Are we going to connect? Are we going to get this? Is this going to happen? Is the phone going to work? Is this going to work? And I go all the way there till we start the air. And then by the time I get on air, it's So I still use it. But when you get when you get the secret, you know, let me know, because I got friends here who they he's just doing his thing. He's getting ready for the show. It's going to be beautiful. Yeah. He's got to do his thing. Whatever I could do to help you.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And it's great. And it's great. So it works. But you're right.
Well, I feel that, too. You know, I mean, I was nervous walking in here and I keyed up and so forth. And right now, as we're talking, it's quieter.
It's sailing, right? Because now we're sailing. Yeah. The story, my friends. What is your story? Does your story really count? Do you really have a story to tell? Does it really matter? I mean, why are you telling it anyway? What is it you want from people? If you were to hold on to somebody's hand and say to them, would you please pay attention to me, please, for 5 minutes? Would you just look at me? Would you just be quiet and hold me in one form or another? I don't know how much more you need than that. But we can't say that. We don't get away with saying that. And people think that it may cross over certain boundaries and you may have to be careful. So instead, we create stories to try to reflect the stuff. But what we're doing, without meaning so, is doing telling stories that take us away from the stuff. So when somebody gets disinterested in your story, maybe it's not so much because you're boring or they're restless. Maybe it's just because they either want the real or nothing. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking a short break, and we're going to be taking some calls, too, at 212-757-3555. That's 757-3555. It's a very interesting thing because we are now Fios'd. Fios'd?
Fios'd. Fios'd. Fiber optics.
Oh, my gosh, almighty. We resisted it for so long. I wanted to have the messengers. Let's grab a quickie. You got no time for a quickie. Let's see if it works. Just to see if it works. It'll be our first call ever. And then we'll put them on hold. See, he thinks I could read his lips. Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Mike, what's that background noise? You got a window open?
I'm in the car.
I know you're in a car. Can I tell? You got your window open? Is the window closed at the moment?
Sure.
Mike, we have just about 1 minute. I want to hear from you. Let's hear what you have to say. 2 minutes. Go ahead. You still with us, Mike? Oh, I didn't want you to close the window from the outside. Mike, are you still there? Oh, you see, we lost it. Yeah. I don't know if that's Mike's fault. We got a new system here. It's 212-757-3555. Sorry to be experimenting, but we're doing our very, very best. And we're going to, I'm going to play something for you that comes from an old, favorite of mine from back then. It's about us and it's about our love. Here comes Mike again. Let's go. Grab Mike. I understand, Julian. I understand. Hang in there, friends. Hang in there. Hang in there. I'll sing to you. All right. Is that Mike or somebody else? All right. We just want to make sure you work. You will be the very first caller in our new system, Anna. Anna, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good, good. Anna, say hello to us.
Hello, and I hope that Socrates and Plato is listening to you, Armand, because you are so wonderful. You've helped me so much over the years, and my friends.
Oh, it's really nice. I don't think Socrates and Plato need to listen. I think they're sitting up there and they're burning it all together. But I thank you so much. You are the first caller in our new system. For this, Anna, you need a reward. We must reward you with something. So when's your birthday?
January 25th.
Are you ready? Here it goes. We're going to sing Happy Birthday to you. We got four men singing it to you. Ready? This is Anna. Happy birthday
to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Anna. Happy birthday to you.
In January.
In January.
25th. Thank you.
Thank you very much, but we have to go because we have to take a break. Would you call us back, please?
Yes.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friend.
We find love, you and I. It's a new game to play. Then we tell our first lie and see love go away. And we find we're alone. We rush on, you and I. We don't need love at all. We need thrills, we need speed. Then we stumble and fall. And we find we're alone. We're loyal, you and I, to flowers that are dead. We forget how to cry. We save photos instead. And we find we're alone. We hear guns, you and I. We ask, what is that? Then we open the Times. We're informed where it's at. And we find we're alone. We're moral, you and I. We stand for what's right. We slaughter all evil by dawn's early light. And we find we're alone. You and I, we're alive and secure. But in a bank and the church, we can never feel sure. And we find we're alone. We've made it, you and I. We have glory and fame. Yet we never know why we feel so ashamed. And we find we're alone. We have power, you and I. But what good is that now? We would build a new world if we only knew how. And we find we're alone. We are old, you and I. We beg warmth from the sun. In the dreams that we dream, we ask, what have we done? And we find we're alone.
The question is, that, by the way, because we find we're alone from where is that from?
Jacques Brel is alive and well in Paris.
Right, a show I saw down in the village many years ago, Jacques Brel. And anyway, that's a beautiful thing, and I recommend it strongly. Jacques Brel was a French poet. Hey, listen, friends. If we find we're alone, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with alone? That's a real question. And we're going to take our caller, Michael, in just a minute, but I want to address you with this, Alan. What happened to that alone space? Did it collapse, the fear of being alone? What happened to it?
I'm not sure what you're referring
well,
to.
Well, alone. Is alone an okay place to be?
It's okay if I can be connected to that experience inside of me. But if I'm not connected to that, if that makes sense, then it's horrible. I'm just kind of distraught. But, you know, I'm beginning to think connection is connection, so I can connect with you, but I can also connect with my experience inside. And if it is really connected and there isn't an intervening story or distraction, then the loneliness is not there. It vanishes.
The loneliness or the fear of being alone disappears behind the connection that you have with yourself and a basic connection with all beings. Because once you're convinced that there is nothing else in the universe except just your body and their bodies, and you die in it, it's all over. Once you're convinced of that, once you have a commitment about your own mortality, you've got to fear being alone. You've got to fear. It's like, yes, a terrible thing, Ben.
Well, I think people conflate being alone and being lonely. You know, being alone doesn't necessarily mean that you're lonely, and it's possible to be lonely in a group of people. So I think that may be where some of that fear comes from.
I get some great alone time. And Julian, you have some great alone time, right?
Yeah, a lot of the time being alone is like my only downtime. Otherwise, it's always kind of filled up with something. And being alone, it kind of is a moment. Is a moment that I really
cherish.
I do cherish it, yeah.
I cherish alone. Huh. Give me a group of guys who are peaceful alone, and I find them much more peaceful with each other, of course. But if you're not peaceful alone, you got to join the army, you got to find brothers, you got to fight with brothers, you got to kill other brothers.
Well, if you're not peaceful alone, you know, you're not peaceful ultimately with yourself. And that's the problem with that.
So you got to go kill somebody.
Well, not necessarily.
Well, you got to join the army, you got to join the, you know, you got to go. What do you think all war is about? All war is about, I'm afraid I'm alone.
I thought all war was about nations trying to be more masculine than other nations.
Same thing.
You know, a contest.
Yeah, so why would you have to be more masculine? Because you're not convinced you are.
Right.
This is Armand DeMille with you with A Positive Mind, but that becomes one of the stories that hides the stuff of, I feel like a weak little boy, and I need somebody to love me. Let's get back to our caller. Michael, thank you for being patient with us. And Mike, I'm sorry we lost you earlier. Anna, thank you very much. I want you to call back because I want to hear your reaction to our singing your birthday. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Armand. Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I think my story is pretty simple. I look like I'm about 60 years old, and I'm always telling people my true age, which is 81 going on 82 in June. And people almost invariably say, oh, my God, you look wonderful. And I think that's my way of getting attention, feeling good about myself. And I also wondered, is that all there is? Like, you know,
That all there is? That's right.
Yeah, I mean, there must be something else, but I fear that I've lost everything else because of my age.
So is the only thing left people admiring you for the fact that you look less than your age?
Yeah.
Is that all there is, you know? And that's a wonderful question. It's that Peggy Lee song. Do you remember that song?
Yeah.
Peggy Lee kind of must hound you. Is that all there is? Is that all there is, my friends? So let's keep dancing is what her solution is.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, you might even have trouble dancing when you're that age.
You know, it must be very hard for you to find a human with whom you could share the stuff, because they want your stories. And you must get so used to telling the stories, Michael, that you don't even know what the stuff is anymore. All you could do is keep looking for it.
Yeah, I know as I talk to you that part of the stuff is fear.
Yeah. Do you have anybody in your life who you could really share, not share, who could really help you explore, who would help you dive into the abyss to find out the bottom of this? Do you have anybody you know who's willing to help you or who with you challenges this inner kind of cavern of emptiness? Do you have anybody? Do you have a friend?
Yes, I have. I have a therapist, a young man, who is very talented, and he recognizes my wisdom, but he also recognizes my problems, my areas that I need to work on, and one of them is what we're talking about, this idea of being able to get to my stuff.
Good for you.
I also tell jokes in the middle of nowhere. I just suddenly burst out into a joke, or sometimes I start to sing. I mean, I'll do anything, but, you know, like, face me, I guess.
Very wise of you. Very wise of you to choose. I would choose, too, if I were you. I'd choose somebody your age, and I would choose somebody young. I think that's very wise. Because remember, no matter what he does, he can never relate to who you are. He can never feel it from the inside because he's way behind in time. So it's usually good to find somebody who does both. I love the young folks. They hang around with them because I get so much from them, and I love the older folks, too, because they're also my brothers. Thanks for calling in, Michael. You're a beautiful man, and thank you for being so stuff-like. And if there's ever anything I could do, if there's ever any way that I could be of help to you, let me know.
I'll do that, Armand.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Sure.
Thank you.
212-757-3555. Yes, it's very interesting, Alan. It's very, very interesting to be with different groups, men, women, children. When the biological imperative is not demanding the behavior. You know, oh, you got to have sex, you got to find a mate, you got to have all this. When that's not taking control, life becomes much more colorful, much more colorful.
Yes.
Is that Anna? Good. Hey, Anna.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. I know you called. You called earlier.
I want to thank you for the birthday song, but I want to know what's the next step in the breathing. When I have any kind of a conflict, even if it's a good conflict or not, I know the story. The story is my mother didn't allow me to be criticized. My mother did not want me to criticize her. Big deal. That's the story. So what's the next step in the breathing? Because I get very frightened in any kind of conflict.
Yeah. Now, when you say any kind of conflict, what happens to you on the inside?
I can feel the fear, and then I start to breathe very quickly, and I can't think.
Yeah, okay. At that moment, what happens to your rage?
There's no rage. I think it's buried deep down. Maybe it's trying to come up. But...
Okay, when did you ever have any rage?
Oh, I've had rage.
Yeah, so how does anger deal with that fear when the two of them get together? See, what I'm suspecting from what you're telling me is that you're really afraid of feeling angry.
Yes.
And that there's a reluctance in you to confront your own anger in response. Is there any truth to that? Do you always have a problem with anger?
Big truth to that. I am, because I don't want to go to the story, but if I got angry, my mother would make me laugh or kid around with me or...
What is that noise in the background? Do you know?
Maybe it's... nothing. I don't have anything on. I just turned the radio off.
Hmm.
Your side. Can you hear it?
Yeah, I hear it. I don't know if it's on my side or your side.
No, I think it's your side. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Well, we have the new phone thing. But anyway, I suspect it's a mixture of your anger and your fear. So when you go into that, I'm going to say the following to you. As you breathe down into it, what I want you to do is breathe into it and discover, just ask yourself the question, am I angry? Get to the am I angry part, because if you could identify the angry part, the am I angry part, I think you're going to find a different way to make a deal with this. Because fear is just a way that when you don't have your resources. See, when you don't have anger as a resource and you don't have the right to attack, it's going to make you get scared and cower, which is what you do.
Okay, so just breathe down, keep breathing
down.
Well,
let me give it to Alan. Let's see what Alan has to say.
Well, a comment is, I think you're brave to get so far, Anna, is to feel that fear. That takes a good deal of courage. And there's a part of you that's able to do that, and that, I believe, should be cherished. And you should be, I hope, be thankful for that, because you're able to get down to that level and find yourself, if you can, staying at that level, I believe, I know that new things will, the body has its own wisdom. There will be an unfolding and some new insights.
Okay, Alan, I just want to ask you, when I get stuck, mind gets stuck, and I have invasive thoughts of revenge of who I'm in conflict with, and I can never, it takes days sometimes for me to, those thoughts to die away.
Yes.
Is there any way I can help those thoughts to die away quicker?
Attend more acutely to your body, Anna, to the signals in your body, to whatever it is, the tightness in your muscles, your breathing, as you already said that you did, were able to do, to any kind of contraction you have, because what is, just as Armand was saying earlier, when we're unable to do that, then all that energy goes into the thoughts and they just keep going on and we get lost eventually in those thoughts. So returning back to the your wisdom of your body.
Right. I could even lie down like the other.
Yes.
Just move the body.
Yes.
Okay. Got you. Thanks.
Good.
Very
Thanks
much,
very guys. Much. Thanks for calling back.
Thank
that
you.
Was a nice happy birthday, wasn't it?
Oh, it was great. It was
you know,
great.
I would go back and I would replay it, and then if you know how to do it, I'd make a quick time cut out of it, and you'd have these four vibrant men singing happy birthday to you.
I have Socrates and Plato singing it right now.
Good for you.
For everything, Armin. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 212-757-3555. So sometimes, you see, even there, I say it was a game we played when we sang happy birthday, but there was perfection in that harmony. There was a perfection in it. There was something happened. When Alan and I started singing, and you guys were singing, we each matched a spot. That perfection was so pretty that someone hearing it would have attended to it. So if they attended to it and they felt it, that was in the moment. That was the moment. That was right here. So imagine that there's a person out there. In fact, I wonder if we're going to do it that way. Yes, okay, so since this thought comes to us from Catherine, right, this whole thought about the story and the thing, here's what we're going to do. We're going to try it this way. We're going to try as soon as I get my associate back. We're going to take the very same thing and do it with Catherine. We're going to sing a happy birthday to Catherine in the same harmony. Now, this is not about the song. I was in a place recently where people celebrated my birthday, and they did it in many different languages. The Dutch way was my very favorite way. I don't know how to do it, but it was beautiful. But let's just say we're not singing the happy birthday song, but we're using the happy birthday song as a way of harmonizing our voices, dedicating to someone. Now, an example of this, which is a very good thing, is very often if you see a music teacher and the person says, "I can't sing," they ask you to test your voice, sing happy birthday. Because everybody could sing that. So let's do it again, and let's do it now with no lead-ins at the ends and no tricks and no ideas. But this is going to be to Catherine. Okay? Whenever her birthday is. Ready? Here we go.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Catherine. Happy birthday to you.
I wonder how many of you sang along with that. Well, we're always learning new things. We have a line, caller on the line. No, we don't have a caller on the line. 212-757-3555. After all of this inquisition, you know, I mean, so we were studying, Alan, Buddhist psychology years ago.
Before it was called that.
Before it was called that, before it was called mindful meditation, before it was called, because it was always basically the same thing. How could you believe that this is what it's all about? It can't be about the story. It can't be about your new car. It can't be about the Verizon installer.
Yes.
It can't be about whether the installation is taking place or not. It can't be about those things.
And you
Jose!
And you know, Armand, there's a little, when we were doing our stuff, and even currently, there's a little fear, right, of giving up that story and dropping down to that level.
Yeah.
Or a lot of fear.
It's nobody's fault, man. It's not your fault. It's not their fault. That's the only thing you got to get. It's nobody's fault. So I could say that screwy guy, he didn't do this right, he didn't do that right, or this person didn't do that. It's not their fault. It's just what they do and who they are. And it's me depending on it. Let's say hello to Jose. Jose, this is Armand Dominguez. You're on the line. Hi there, Jose. I think we have a Jose. We had a Jose. How often do you have to give up a story? How often? How often do you find that you have to relinquish it? Have you ever run into that, Ben, where you know you want to be resentful and you depend on being resentful, and at the same time you're depending on being resentful, but you know it's just junk that you're believing?
Well, I don't know about the resentful part of it, but certainly I know that, you know, my story in many ways is a part of my identity. And I think for a lot of people, giving up the story is so difficult because it's over time, it becomes our identity. It becomes who we are. And when you chip away at the story, you discover that, wow, there's a whole me, there's a whole personality, there's a whole self and or soul, whatever you want to, however you want to describe it, beneath the story that I haven't been in touch with. And I've been using this story as my identity. And that's why it's difficult to just let it go.
Wow, you mean you got to give up a whole self?
Sure.
Just to let go of the story. And that leaves you with stuff exposed.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, how many parts of our story are how we define ourselves, right? Where we're from, who we are, what groups we're a part of, whether it's a religious group or, you know, what school you went to, or a million different ways that we attach our story to our identity. And, you know, telling that story becomes sort of projecting our identity. And I think that's why it's something that many of us cling to.
And you,
I certainly have in many ways.
And I, like you, I give up a linkage. The story, it links one moment to another, and it all kind of fits. It plays out as a narrative. So without that linkage, where am I? As you were just saying, I'm not in familiar territory, and I'm really into whatever is going to spontaneously arise the next moment. I don't know what that'll be. So it's maybe you could say a new self created every moment.
Our guest, Alan Wells from Morristown, New Jersey. Morristown. You did. How did I know that?
You just know so much.
Morristown, New Jersey. Alan Wells. Hey, we've got one more on the line. Joy is with us. Joy, are you with us?
Yes, I am online. How are you?
I'm good. How are you feeling?
Good. I'm good. When you're talking about stories, I have to think about my story because I found myself after I had left a long-term relationship, a marriage, actually. I felt so betrayed, I would find myself telling my story to women all the time, almost as a cautionary tale, that it could happen to you because after 25 years of marriage, it happened to me, and I was blindsided. You know, I had been very ill, and I used all my energy to get myself better, to come home and to be with my family, and then I realized the home I thought I had didn't exist. And I just would tell my story over and over. I got to the point where I had a psychologist, and my husband had ruined the relationship with my psychologist by calling him and saying things to him, and he, like, got afraid and cut me loose, so I had no one to talk to. So, you know, strangers were people you could talk to. And just in that little exchange, there was some kind of safety and some kind of support that you give them and they give you back. And it was just a little bonding. But I find as time goes on, I need less and less.
Well, that's not a bonding. You see, the bonding was with the stories.
Yes.
And it's not the bonding for the stuff, you know. And I tell you, I would love to talk to you more about this, Joy. Can you send me an email? And Armand at thepositivemind.com, and maybe we could get you some, push you along a little bit with this.
Thank you, Armand. I appreciate that.
It would be my pleasure. Armand at thepositivemind.com. We do have to be going, my friend.
All right. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we do have to be going, and thank you very much for our experimental first set of The Positive Mind. Special thanks, Alan Wells, Ben Starr, Julian Joyello. We'll be back with you soon, my friends.
Thank you so much, Armand.
They are rich, they are poor, their illusions are gone, they share one heart for two. Their homes all smell of time, of old photographs and an old-fashioned song. Though you may live in town, you live so far away. Cry too much, a tear or two still always seems to cloud the eye. They tremble as they watch the old silver clock. When day is through, it tick-tocks oh so slow.